Many the candle to stand and be burned. Women.
Following is a previously broadcast program.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
I wanna know what's going on. I wanna love like there's nothing wrong. And the news unfurling, and the wind keep whirling, and the devil's learning, and he's teaching eight so. Where we there? We out, yeah. Where we there? We out, yeah. Where we there? And we keep on fighting, and we keep on fighting. Me wanna get free from the liars lying with the sheep, and the lions trying to defeat. With some inner learning, there's no sleep, 'cause the world keep burning. Where we there? We out, yeah. Where we there? We out, yeah. Where we there? We out, yeah. And we keep on fighting. And we keep on fighting.
Escort them, government policy, in our reach, pass and not practice what them preach, talking about the ghetto youth. We need socialism for the ghetto youth, yo. Old man carry cane pan donkey, pan iPhone, rum shop chill spot. The sound of dominoes, enough good music, hurricane woes, zinc roof gone, shatter Babylon, little youth gone in a school uniform playing football, firm braids on locks, knock on farm, Westmoreland. Welcome to Savannah, say, welcome to Savannah.
I can't even remember the first time I went to Jamaica, but every time I go, it's like a spiritual experience. Going back to my mother's land, you know, the sights, the sounds, the smells, just beautiful. Learning Patois as a second language as a Jamaican born on fire. Yo, no pretense, just a residence. See? Hey.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It's another Tuesday evening and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm in studios with...
Renee Jordan. And today we have a special guest with us. And just because the goal sometime is not just to talk about what's happening in our community, but also to raise the collective consciousness of our people with a little bit of learning. So today we will be learning a little bit as we speak to Tracy, who specializes in teaching children with hearing loss. So Tracy, welcome, welcome. It's good to have you for the first time on our show. How about you introduce yourself to the people?
Yeah, so thank you, Kim and Vinay, for having me. A bit about me, I am an itinerant educational specialist at the Montreal Law School for the Deaf. Our mission there is to teach children with hearing loss to listen and to speak. I've been there since 2010, so this is, we're going on 11 years now, and it's a profession that's near and dear to my heart. It's something that has really contributed to who I am as a person, having grown up with hearing loss myself. And yeah, let's do this.
Great, great, great. So, just before we get into the whole nitty-gritty of hearing loss, could you tell us what is it hearing? What is listening?
So, contrary to what popular belief is, we don't actually hear with our ears. Our ears are actually just the way in. We hear with our brain. Our brain is what helps us to understand sounds. So your ear is actually acting as a funnel. The outer ear, as you see it, is acting like a funnel. It's just capturing the sound, and it will take it through the pathway through the inner ear to the brain, where the brain analyzes it. It goes to the auditory centers of the brain, and the brain analyzes and tells you, oh, yeah, I hear that sound. That sound is the microwave beeping. My dinner must be ready. So we actually hear with our brain.
So basically,
so the outer of the ear is,
go ahead,
purely cosmetic,
if you want to call it that. It acts as a funnel. So those of us who don't have, well, I'm saying those of us, I do have two ears, but there are some that do not have outer ear. That's the natural formation. There's a natural condition where that is the reality for them. And so their ear is not then acting as a funnel. But yes, the true form of the ear is acting as a funnel to capture sound. It was designed specifically for that purpose.
And when does hearing actually begin?
So we actually start hearing in utero at 20 weeks gestational age. That is just around the 5-month point. That's where we really start hearing and talking about singing to your baby, even though they're still in the baby's belly, in the mummy's belly, to sing to the baby, to talk to the baby. The baby's getting used to those voices. As soon as that baby's born, they kind of recognize their mother's voice because they've heard it they've heard it for the last couple of months that they were growing in the belly. Daddies, too, talk to your baby that, like, you want your baby to know your voice. And all of that language and richness and development is starting so early, much earlier than we actually think of it.
And what happens, so it isn't actually very silly then for parents to, like, let's say, take a set of headphones and place it on their stomach.
It's always better to be natural voice. Baby wants to hear you.
Okay.
The baby wants to hear mommy and daddy and maybe the brothers and sisters that he's going to be growing up with or she's going to be growing up with. I mean, you have to remember that what the baby's hearing in utero, it's not going to be clear. It's not going to be clear speech. He's not going to come out saying, I know my name because you told me it in utero. He's still in an amniocentesis. There's a lot of water around him. Think about when you're listening underwater. Sound is not clear. But still in all, you want to be giving that baby that richness of connecting with you. And that's building on your bond with your baby as well, right?
Right.
So, I mean, sure, we have all those ideas where we can put a headset on the baby, on the baby's ears or on your belly so that the baby can hear. But really, he wants to hear your voice. He wants to hear a live voice.
It's more a question of, like, they're hearing the tones and, like, the vibration of your voice rather than actual words or so. So they're getting used to the energy that's coming from your voice. And that's what they're familiar with, would you say?
I mean, it's a very, very technical question that I'm not really able to answer, but I think you're on the right gist. We all sound different. Even if it's in our little ways, we all have a different timbre to our voice, and we attune ourselves to those little differences. I mean, if you listen to my voice, I think both of you know me quite well. You hear my voice anywhere, you know it's me, you know? And so, like, there's those little pieces that we want our child to pick up on very early on. And auditory development begins well before they're born, so let's capitalize on it.
What are some common misconceptions that people have about hearing loss?
So there's quite a few. I'll give you five that really speak to me. The first is the idea that when we have listening technology, whether it's the hearing aids or a cochlear implant or a brainstem implant or bone anchored hearing aids, any of those technologies, they don't restore hearing to 100%. So if I use the analogy of glasses, which people are more familiar with, if you go to the eye doctor and you get a really good prescription for your vision loss, those glasses should correct to 20/20 vision. So when you put your glasses on, you can see as you could before you had the vision loss. Not quite like that with hearing loss. So we're putting the technology on to help us access the sound. It's giving us the utmost ability to hear those sounds. But if you go all the way back to what I said right off the bat, we don't hear with our ears, we hear with our brain. So it's all about building brain and building those connections. And people often misconstrue that because another misconception is that louder is not always better. There are different types of hearing losses, and more often the situation is louder is not clearer. So when I say, I'm sorry, I didn't get what you said, and you just bark it at me a little bit louder, I'm just getting it louder. Not actually telling me what I need to hear. I'm not necessarily getting the information. So we want to be thinking more about how can we maximize communication? How can we make it easier for that person to understand what we're saying or understanding why there's a breakdown? I mean, if we're having a conversation in the middle of a parade, for example, obviously, the communication is going to be impaired. There's a big parade going on behind us. Whereas, you know, we want to be monitoring things like that. Another misconception is the idea that all people with hearing loss are deaf and sign. And it's a really big misconception because someone who uses spoken language, as myself, can use the term deaf with a lowercase d. Whereas someone who uses sign language as their primary mode of communication, it doesn't mean that they don't speak, but that might be their first language. They're signers. Signing is their mode of communication, and they use a capital D. So when and it's a community thing, and it's an identity that we're forming. Some people have a foot in both camps because they represent not necessarily represent, sorry, I shouldn't say that, but that they feel as if they're members of both of those groups. It's a very fluid thing, it's a very personal thing, and there's a lot of diversity within the community. But, I mean, I've had on more than one occasion where I've had to say that I've had to disclose that I had a hearing loss because I didn't quite understand what was going on, and it was to the other person's benefit to know what the challenges were that I was experiencing, and they automatically would be like, oh, so you sign, and they start doing some signs for me, and I don't actually sign. I know a few to get by. I know a few to be able to, you know, greet people that I might meet along the way, but it's not a language that I know. And ASL or FSF, what is it? LSQ, sorry, in Quebec, or they're all their own representative language. They're not actually a translation of the language that we're speaking. So ASL, which is American Sign Language, is its own recognized language. Just because you speak ASL doesn't mean that you can translate that into perfect grammatical English. It doesn't actually translate.
Right.
I guess the last one that I have that's a very common misconception is the idea that hearing loss is something that we see in older folks. And while some time ago we might have been able to generalize that, I mean, it was never 100% true, but we might have been able to generalize that a while ago, it's still not true today. I mean, the world we live in is noisy. The modern world we live in, with all the different machines and all the different technology that we interact with on a daily basis, is noisy. And so we're finding that hearing loss is much more pervasive into different societies and different age groups. And it's actually, I mean, I think I was looking at a statistic not too long ago, which said that in Canada, as of 2019, 57% of adults between the ages, I think it was 40 and 79, had at least a mild hearing loss. Just because, I mean, our daily grind, we're on Zoom or we're, you know, listening to music while we're on the treadmill and we're putting earbuds in our ears, like all of that contributes to noise and it contributes to the hearing health and the degradation of our hearing health if we're listening to music that's too loud or for too long a period of
time.
What
is too loud? What is too loud when it comes to music?
When it comes to music, if your music is on volume, on maximum volume, that's too loud. What I had seen in my research was that the average thing is, average music on the highest volume is actually 85 decibels. And if you consider that normal conversational speech is 50 decibels and a whisper is 35 decibels, and, you know, something like a fire, like fireworks, for example, is like over 100 dB. It's 100, going almost to 120 dB. Anything above 85 decibels is considered too loud. It's considered damaging.
And how long would we have to be in that said environment for some damage to occur?
I guess it depends.
Like, how long am I going to be in the party before there's damage?
I can't give you an exact set amount of time for that particular example. I mean, there's going to be different levels of different amounts of time that you could be exposed to different decibel levels before it's damaging. We know that at 85 dB and higher, damage is occurring. If I give you an example of a police siren or an ambulance siren, if you happen to be right next to that, I mean, your first instinct should be put your fingers in your ear because that's loud enough that you're getting immediate damage. It's instantaneous. Okay. That's how loud that is. Another example would be fireworks. I said 120 before. Fireworks is actually at 140 to 160 dB. So if you're not at an appropriate distance, which is why we always look at fireworks from, you know, quite a far away place,
yeah.
You want to be protecting your ears. That is incredibly loud, and those are considered explosive sounds. Those are not sounds you're listening to all the time, and they go off instantaneously, and the damage is just as instantaneous.
Yeah. I myself, even though a lot of people don't know, I suffer from hearing loss, and I actually went to a clinic and found out that I have 26 to 27% hearing loss in my right ear. And I actually didn't start noticing it until much later. It happened fairly young. I was probably about 15, 16. I was in a pool and dove down to the bottom of the pool about 8-9 feet. And I was just chilling there, and I had listened to someone who said that when you're at that depth and you feel the pressure on your ears, you just blow your nose, and then, you know, the pressure will be relieved. Unfortunately, the person didn't say that you're supposed to lightly blow your nose, not blow your nose like you're blowing your nose when you have a cold. And I heard like almost like a gun went off on the right side of my head. And so there's also the actual physical damage that we can do to our ears. It's not just sound. Things like putting Q-tips in your ears as well is highly discouraged.
An audiologist / colleague of mine has told me, and I don't know where this comes from, so I could only quote her, you shouldn't be putting anything in your ear that's smaller than your elbow.
Whoa, okay.
I mean, real funny way to say it, but you know, it gets the point across, right? Like, first of all, can you put your elbow to your ear? That's the first question. Right. Second of all, the concept of would your elbow ever going to your ear? So, I mean, yeah, putting things in your ear, highly discouraged. Just to go back to what you're saying about how you felt a physical sensation, you know, it doesn't even have to be that strong. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation, I mean, where you come out of the party, we've been in a party all night, we've been listening to all that music, and you come out of the party and things just sound a little muffled. Sounds like you're still in that environment, or you feel a little bit of a ringing in your ears and a little bit of a tingling in your ear.
Like tinnitus.
The ringing in your ear is tinnitus, yeah, but you could also have just that tingling. You're not necessarily hearing it, but just like a little bit of a, not uncomfortable to the point of like, oh my goodness, this is bothering me, but you know, you're feeling something. Something's going on there. You were in an environment that was too loud, and you were in an environment that was too loud for too long.
Oh. So what have we done by being in said environments and getting to that ring point? What has happened to my ears?
So it's hard to explain when we can't see. But so on the inside of your, so you've got the outer ear, which is what we were describing before as the funnel. It's the outer ear, and it's, you know, where we would put the said Q-tip if we were going to put something in our ear. Then after that, we meet the eardrum, and that's, you know, that vibrating, we can call it like a thin shield, as it were. And that blocks, that separates the outer ear to the middle ear. Middle ear is where we have the three bones, and it's where we have, if you're going to have an ear infection, often that's where it'll occur. And then we move into the inner ear, and there's this shape that looks a lot like a shell, like a snail shell.
Yeah.
And inside there, there's liquid, which is helping us with our balance. So, I mean, your ears are so important, even just for balance. But also there's hair cells in there, 20,000 hair cells, to be exact, when they're healthy. And, you know, it'd be really interesting to see how quickly those hair cells are damaged and by what. Because I mean, there's mundane things that we do every day that we don't even realize. For example, I don't know if you've ever seen anybody cutting the grass with earbuds in their ears or like the protective heads. The reason why they're doing that is because a lawnmower runs at 85 dB. And if you go back to what we were just saying, 85 dB is loud. It's damaging.
Right.
You know, like those are, I mean, cutting the grass is a mundane thing. We're not thinking about it that way. But it is. It's damaging to our ears. If you think about going to the movies, we were just saying the other day, they have movies for tots for a reason. And the whole idea of the movies for tots is that the volume is lower because we know that babies' ears are premature. They're not, you know, they haven't completely finished their development yet. We want to protect them. But what about us adults? I mean, the average movie, it can be anywhere from 70 dB, which is not too bad, to 104 dB.
104?
Depending on the kind of movie you're watching, like if it's a war movie or an action movie with lots of guns and stuff like that. And the more realistic the gun is, the louder it will sound.
And we've all been in that movie.
It's higher than the lawnmower.
It's a louder, not higher, you know, when you're tired, yes. But it's louder. Yeah, and then if you used a really good example, Kim, because if we think about that, we've all been in that movie where the gun goes off and we don't even see who the person is firing the gun.
Yeah.
Right? You didn't see that coming. You weren't even prepared for it because you have reflexes. Usually, if you're preparing for something, your reflexes help you, you know, gear up for that.
Yeah.
If something goes off right next to you and you had no idea, your reflexes had no chance to react. You had no chance to get ready to say, okay, let's get ready for this. This is going to happen. All right, I'm going to flinch. It's going to happen. It went off. You didn't see it happening.
So is it safe to say that, like, your body will protect you if you can anticipate, like, the sound to an extent? Obviously, it's not going to, like, go, like, shields up in your ears, but there's a certain amount of protection that will happen. Is that an accurate statement? Possibly, maybe.
In my next life, I'm going to be an audiologist. I'll be able to answer that better. But I think on a very primitive level, you're on the right foot. Because I know what I can say is that we have, our body will always have natural reflexes, natural ways to kind of just protect us and shield us from things.
Yeah.
And we know that people with hearing loss, depending on the type of hearing loss, those reflexes are almost non-existent. And it's not that they're non-existent, but the sound has to be so loud because there's a deficit there, right? So it's got to be that much louder for that reflex to kick in.
Yeah.
So while I can't say for sure 100% that you're what you just said is 100% accurate, I think you're getting the gist of it. You are on the right track because it makes your body unable to react because it didn't have that chance.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 9:30 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are talking to Tracy Green, who is a teacher who has been teaching for 11 years, teaching students, children who have hearing loss. We're going to take a quick break and come back to you. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT Yes, we're back. Just in case you tuned in for the first time, this is Soul Perspectives on Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Kim Dominique Ferguson alongside
Renee Jordan.
And we have a special guest in the building with us, on the airwaves with us. We have Tracy Green, who is a teacher who has been working with students with hearing loss for the past 12 years now?
11. Don't okay. age me.
Oh, yes, 2021, not 2022. Sorry, my bad.
So, Tracy, tell us who diagnoses hearing loss.
So, an audiologist is the professional that we would go to for a hearing loss diagnosis. We hope that every child at least gets to see an audiologist at some point. We do hope that at a certain point, every child will have had their hearing somewhat assessed before they leave the hospital so that we know what we're dealing with right away. We want to be proactive. We want to get access to sound to those children as early as possible. Right now in Quebec, unfortunately, we're still waiting for that to be the case. In 2009, the government promised that we would have universal hearing screening for all children born in Quebec. 2021, we're still waiting for that to be the case. We have three hospitals in Montreal that heard of babies by being screened before they leave the hospital, and it's solely based on where they're born.
Okay.
And that means that children with hearing loss who are not necessarily being screened are being identified as late as 18 months. And if you go all the way back to what we were saying at the beginning of the program, children are hearing 20 weeks gestational age, so before they're even born. And if that child is born with hearing loss and they're only diagnosed at 18 months, think about the deprivation, the sensory deprivation that they're in. That is the critical, we're looking at some critical windows that have been closed, and there's going to be some difficulties and some challenges along the way for that child.
Hmm. And how is that hearing test done?
So it's largely dependent on the age of the person and their abilities in terms of participation, but it is a behavioral test. So children who are babies, if we can talk about babies, the screening is done, the babies are put to sleep, and we're able to do, there's two types of tests that can be done. We have an otoacoustic emissions test, and we have the ABR, which is the automated brainstem response test. As soon as we have children a little bit older, we can have them in the booth, which is, you know, that big fridge soundproof booth that's really fun to be in if you're not claustrophobic. And we can use some behavioral testing where we can see how we present a sound, we see how the baby reacts, if they flinch or if they show any sense of having heard something. A little bit older, I mean, as young as 6 months of age, we can teach children to do conditions, kind of like what we do with our pet dogs and cats, where we can condition them to do something as a conditioned response. So they have a block or a toy or something, and they hear a sound, and they can, you know, they realize that, oh, I heard a sound, I can put it in the basket, or I can put something on Mr. Potato Head or what have you. I skipped a step there. We also have some visual response too. So babies will turn to a sound, and when they turn, they get like a light that flashes up that rewards them for having reacted to what they heard. And as soon as they're old enough to press a button, which is what adults do, and I mean, kids as young as, I mean, I have some 7-year-olds who are able to do that. You're sitting in the booth, the audiologist presents the sound. If you hear it, you press the button. If you don't hear it, you wait until you hear it. And you have to remember that what you're getting on an audiogram is actually the response for 50% of the time. So if you can respond 50% of the time to that sound, that's the threshold that we're looking for. It's not actually 100%, and that's a really big misconception. It means that I can hear that sound at that frequency, at that volume or intensity, 50% of the time. In other words, 2 out of 4 presentations.
Mm. And you know, one thing that I found interesting too is that with the hearing loss, there's certain tones or can we say intensity of sound that I can hear and that I can't hear. That my other ear, it's the opposite. So, like, because there's a certain amount of hearing loss, there are certain tones that my so-called 100% ear doesn't pick up on anymore.
So frequency. So intensity is loudness of sound.
Okay, yeah.
So intensity is loudness of sound. So there are frequencies that might be more challenging for you to hear. It's not that you can't hear them, but you're not hearing them at the same intensity. You need more intensity. You need it to be louder for you to detect that it's there. So when I was saying that the sound, when you get 2 out of 4 presentations, that's merely the detection of sound. That's just, I think I heard something. You're not doing anything with it. It's just, I might have heard it.
Yeah.
It's just the detection of sound. And that's where we talk about, you know, getting children as early as possible identified and amplified. We want to put the amplification, we want them hearing aids on those ears as early as possible, because we know that, how do we learn language? How do we understand the world? It's through hearing things and building connections, hearing parents talk, hearing our friends talk next to us, hearing sound, realizing that if I press the button on the microwave, it makes that sound. It makes it do. When I flush the toilet, there's that whoosh that goes down the toilet. You know, like all of those things are neural connections. We're building brain. And if you think about the idea that a baby is, I mean, babies sleep a lot, but we tend to stay eyes open, ears on. It's the same thing. We want to have those hearing aids on as early as possible, 10 hours a day, so that we're thriving and we're on the right path. We're not going to say it's 100%, but we're on the right path for typical language and cognitive development.
So who should get tested, let's say? Who should get tested? Should you have a, let's say you suffer from a hearing loss yourself. Does that automatically mean that the chances of your child suffering a hearing loss are greater?
We don't suffer hearing loss. I just felt to say that. We don't suffer hearing loss. I'm living very happily with it. Definitely, if you have a hearing loss, you want to make sure that your children are being tested. But if I'm going to give you the right answer, who should be tested? Everyone. Everyone. Everyone, why not? I mean, that's the whole point of newborn hearing screening for babies. But I mean, as adults, why not? If you think about the fact that we live in a noisy world, and you think about, like, just like Kim said, something that had happened many years ago is something that came to light only more recently.
Yeah.
In that statistic that I had said to you before from Stats Canada, that was hearing loss that wasn't even they didn't notice it. They didn't notice it. It wasn't something where they were able to say, "Oh yeah, I have a hearing loss and I know exactly what it is." It was what they call unperceived, because hearing loss can be unperceived, especially if it's noise induced, just starting off in the high frequency. And remember, damage is cumulative. So the first little bit of damage you have, it has an impact. Is it noticeable to you? Maybe not. But over time, it starts to become more noticeable. And it may not become more noticeable to you. It might be more noticeable to those around you. Suddenly, the TV's louder. You didn't notice that you were putting the TV a little bit louder. It's just over time that suddenly you're in the car and the music's louder. And the other person's going like, "Gee, that's really loud. Like, have you noticed that?" I mean, it happens slowly but surely, and damage is cumulative. So sometimes you need many little drops in the bank before you start to realize that there's something there.
And that being said, I said the word suffer. I apologize for that.
No, but it's okay.
There's a certain language that people use. What are typically some things that people say they have a hearing loss that they may not mean it in an offensive way, but it can be perceived offensively, let's say. I was talking to someone earlier today, and they shouted to their kid, you know, they said, "Hey, are you deaf?" You know,
I don't
think that would be something that, you know, you would want to say in that environment, or maybe you would want to say to anyone, but
there you go. You just hit the nail on the head. If you wouldn't want that said to you, joking or not, why are you saying it? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not something that we would say to anybody, because Again, we live in a noisy world. If I'm calling across to you and you didn't hear me, I need to stop and think for a minute. Why didn't she hear me? Am I trying to talk to you while the train is passing? Mm-hmm. Am I trying to talk to you and we're in a noisy environment with all kinds of other things going on? It doesn't take very much. I mean, really. It really doesn't take very much. And I mean, what are things that people commonly say? I'm going to go with the thing that most commonly happens that is frustrating is when you say that you don't understand and the person starts talking louder. Like, yes, repeat. If I didn't hear what you said, please repeat it. Please repeat it first, because sometimes I just need to clarify what I think I heard, or I just need to fill in one. I mean, remember, sometimes the message comes in as Swiss cheese because some things weren't, you know, I didn't quite get everything. So if you say it to me exactly the way you said it the first time, I might be able to plug in a few of those missing holes that I had. And then if I still don't get it, is there another way you can say the same thing? Sometimes paraphrasing is really helpful as well. I mean, we're all learning this in the pandemic, that sometimes you've got to go over and beyond what's the obvious. If you're talking about the elephant that's in the room and the elephant is there, we can see it, why not point to the elephant while you're saying what you're saying? Because now I've got that connection. But this, are you deaf? Never appropriate on any level. And I mean, unfortunately, people say things sometimes without intending any harm. And I don't take much from it, honestly, because I realize that purely based on ignorance.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I developed because of my hearing loss is, like, I have a 3-time, could you repeat that, limit, whereby I'm kind of like, what did you say? Huh? Say that again? And if I ask you the 3rd time, I'm just like, yeah. So you basically, I could end up agreeing to anything on the 3rd time, because the 3rd time, I don't want to ask the person to repeat, whether they know that I have hearing loss or not. There's like a huge, like, I just feel very self-conscious about it.
So let me challenge you with that then. Mm-hmm. How do you decide when it's the time, when to do that? Because I'm pretty sure you don't do that at the doctor's office.
No, for sure. Usually when it happens, it is in a noisy environment. It's usually in a noisy environment and the person's not necessarily trying to speak clearer, or like they just repeat what they said at the same in the same cadence or the same frequency or the same intensity, you know?
So I'm going to take it one step further and just say that that's human nature. We all, to a certain extent, decide how important is this information in this moment. And sometimes it really isn't all that important, that I don't need to go that extra mile to be like, yes, I don't know what they're saying. I don't want to be rude and say, I don't really need this information that you're giving me. But I can say, yes, okay. Whereas there's other situations where it's like, no, I need to have this information. Like, sorry, what did you say? And that, it leads to disclosure. I mean, those who know me really well, so I know that some of my colleagues now are going to be like, you just said all that on the airwaves. I'm not a person to disclose. I'm a person to choose and pick and choose on this situation whether it's worth my doing that. Because, you know what, it's not everybody's business. And communication breakdowns happen to everybody, categorically everybody. And everybody decides based on what else they've got going on in their mind, what else they've got going on in their life, what else is going on in the room that they're in, how much attention and how much energy they're going to put towards. I mean, hold on to that and don't take that on yourself. I mean, you know that. Nobody else has to know that, you know?
Exactly. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are talking to Tracy Green, an educator who has worked with children for the past 10, 11 years at a hearing loss school. We're going to take a quick break and come back to you. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3. We try to feel the spaces in between.
Just see. socializing. Sea levels is rising. Right, right, right.
Make me feel the boom.
We're back. It is still Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I'm on the air with
Renee Jordan. And we're talking to Tracy about hearing loss. And we left off, and we were speaking about how the diagnosis of hearing loss and then some of the terminologies that are good ways to speak of hearing loss and some of the ways that we shouldn't necessarily speak to someone with hearing loss. And I just thought to myself, just going through the stages of life, how can, from the very small baby, how can a parent pick up when their baby might be suffering from a hearing loss?
Yeah,
so they haven't been tested.
And they haven't been tested, yeah. So that's two-thirds of our babies born in Quebec. Come on, we've got to do better than that, eh? So those babies are, I mean, you want to be doing what you would typically be doing with babies. You want to be playing peekaboo. You want to be singing. You want to be reading. You want to be doing all that great stuff. We know that babies coming out of the womb are going to be able to react to loud sounds. So, I mean, if somebody comes in the room and slams the door, babies should startle or jump. We know around 3 months, they really start to be good at recognizing caregiver's voice, mom and dad's voice. I mean, we know they've been hearing mom and dad from the time they were in utero, but remember, through an amniocentesis with all that liquid. But definitely after 3 months of listening to mom and dad talking to him or her all day, every day, and singing, and then he really starts to react to mom's words. And when you see mom or dad, you smile, right? You start to, maybe not smile necessarily right away, but you react and you show that you're happy to see. Around 4 to 6 months, babies love to sing and gurgle and coo to themselves in their, you know, while they're in their crib. They're entertaining themselves with the sounds that they're able to make. And around that time, they're starting to babble. They're starting to make some sounds, you know, mama, ba ba ba, pa pa pa, some beginning babble sounds. Definitely around 7 months, baby's starting to turn to sound. You know, that localization is coming in. He's starting to react to changes in tones of voice. Do we get an idea that, hey, you're really happy versus not doing so well today? Like, starting to pick up those nuances. You start to see when those things aren't coming in quite when you would expect them, that you can start to say, I wonder. Yeah. And we know that when there are delays in development, they start to become noticeable around 6 months. So all those months and those age months, stages that I gave you, they're not set in stone. I mean, some babies start to babble at 7 months instead of 4 to 6 months. Some babies start to, you know, they come out the womb kind of seemingly with a lot to say, and they're babbling really early. So, I mean, they're ballpark ranges. But definitely around 6 months, you want to be seeing, when you're making a sound, is that baby reacting in some way?
Yeah.
Is there a change in affect when, you know, mom or dad is talking to them versus when a stranger is talking to them? Are they talking to themselves? Are they entertaining themselves? Are they cooing? Are they, you know, sounds that babies make? A very quiet baby is a baby who's not hearing sounds to be able to imitate.
That's very interesting, because some people would say, oh, that's such a good baby. The baby is so quiet, you know.
You can be quiet and that's your temperament. Mm-hmm. But quiet, having a quiet temperament is not the same as a quiet baby, in the sense of when you're playing, like, if you're playing peekaboo, you've got your play routines that you do with your children. Like, everybody's got their toys, then their little, not their toys necessarily, but their little routine that they do with their kids, whether it's when they're changing the baby's diaper or, you know, the little routine that you have before bedtime. Baby reacts to that. The same way you like to know what's going to happen next, baby likes to know what's going to happen next. So if you know that every single night, the last thing you do is you sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and baby's not reacting at all to that, just looking back at you.
It's not evidence.
But right.
It may be a sign that there may be something going on there.
Right. Right, so that's where I'm not saying, hey, that's this, there's a problem right there. I'm saying, mental note.
Look into it.
Mm-hmm. But then when you start to see a few different patterns of things, like, I mean, if somebody comes into the room with a blowhorn and baby doesn't react,
Right.
Something to note, you know? Like, these are things that you're just kind of keeping your eyes open for, because we don't, something that's really confusing for people is, when we start looking at baby from all of the different aspects independently, hearing is one aspect. Yes, we've got our ears, we've got our eyes, but all of that affect, it's all intertwined. All of that is affecting baby's language development and baby's cognitive development. So what are we holding back on when we're not testing these babies as soon as they're born to make sure that we send them home with the best possible success to be on the perfect track for development? A typical development, let's say. It's not going to be perfect. There's bumps in the road. But why are we not doing that? And what do we need to do to be getting to that level?
So that being said, once let's say you have a baby tested and perhaps there is a hearing loss that has been discovered, what can you or what can a parent perceive that life would be like for a child who navigates the world with a hearing loss? What would it be like?
So everybody's journey is very personal. No two stories are going to be exactly the same because there's so many factors that contribute to them. I'm going to say that the number one thing that's going to make a difference in this child's life is how early was this hearing loss diagnosed? How quickly did we get those hearing aids on those ears, and if we need an implant because that's where we're going, how quickly were we able to get the hearing aids on the ear so that brain was stimulated? And how quickly were we able to get that child implanted as soon as they were old enough to be so? And how quickly were we able to get them access to services so that, again, we can get them on that path to typical development? Typical development milestones on all kinds of levels. But if I just, you know, I keep climbing back up on my soapbox, and I'm sorry, but it's something I'm really passionate about. But if I remove myself from that soapbox, just think about your own development growing up as a child. Could you imagine life where you didn't necessarily hear when the doorbell rang, but suddenly there were people here? Or that you didn't hear when you flushed the toilet. You didn't hear that twist. You didn't hear the Kleenex coming out of the Kleenex box. I mean, that's a really big one. I've seen friends of mine when they didn't necessarily have technology growing up, but then, you know, as an adult, they had technology, and pulling the Kleenex out of the box and realizing there's a sound. It's not that loud, but there's a sound. And then being like, holy smokes, and pulling out all the Kleenex and feeling like you're 5 years old again. I mean, we live in a noisy world, yes, and we use the word noisy often in a negative connotation, but with sound comes meaning. There's no sound that has no meaning. We attach meaning to sound. So could you imagine growing up with no access to the nuances that sound provides in our world, not being able to enjoy music in the same way that everybody else enjoys music, or pick up information that...
Like, you hear the sound, but it's not to the full capacity. Like, it's muted.
It could be muted, but it's not even about being muted, because we're all going to do what we do with the technology we have and with the access we have. But if nobody teaches you and helps you to understand that, hey, the Kleenex box makes the sound when we pull the Kleenex out. It's very soft. I know it's really hard to hear, but let's do it together. Okay, you ready, Kim? We're going to listen. And I'm going to do this right next to your hearing aid. Did you hear that? How awesome was that? Let's do that again.
Well, and then
the kid starts to learn that, oh, there's a sound associated with that.
Yeah.
And then we draw their attention to there's a sound associated with all kinds of other things. We call those auditory events. They're auditory events because dad coming home at the end of the day, yes, there's a visual. Yes, we see dad come through the door, but let's think about it. Before we hear dad come through the door, we might hear the car motor stop. We might hear the car door open and shut again. We might hear it, I mean, if we're really good, we might hear him open the trunk and pull out a gift that he bought on the way home. All of those things that, you know, some of us take for granted.
Yeah.
Are not necessarily things that are available to everybody.
But I remember when I was tested and they gave me, like, I think I had a month to test the hearing aid. And, like, just in that moment of them putting the hearing aid on me, and they just took me to walk. And I have, like, 100% on one side, but there's only 74% on the other side. And, like, it was mind-blowing because now I was hearing this atrium that we were walking in, and I was hearing at it on a different level. So I can imagine for someone who has either never heard anything whatsoever, or all of the sounds are muted or muffled or very, 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 very low intensity, or whatever the expression is. I can imagine, like, it's just like opening a new present, you know, and it's a whole experience.
So one of the best things about my job is being able to see babies when they're activated after cochlear implantation. It is just
what's that? Just
one of the most precious things that you can see. And I don't work with babies. So we have different, we all work in different sectors in our school. I don't work with babies. But one of the exciting things about my job is that I get to see professionals who work with babies. I get to watch professional development where I get to see babies, you know, activated, and to hear the joy and to see how they react that first time. It is just, there are lots of really amazing things to see in this world.
You know, when you said about hearing is really receiving information, I can remember as a child hearing my dad's work van as it would approach the house. And I couldn't imagine not having the information of people arriving to my house, especially if it was strangers and they just appeared. And then it made me think of the information side of it. And I'm thinking of, like, sometimes I would be in church, let's say, and you would hear someone unwrapping a candy, which has a very, it's not a very loud sound to everybody, or not everybody perceives this sound, but it could be annoying to some. And sometimes you have some older members who may be unwrapping a candy, and they don't hear that it's noisy, or they don't hear the noise emitting from their candy, but people are looking at them, and they're sort of missing this information. Could you tell us a little bit about aging and seniors in terms of their hearing?
So we know that access to information at any age is important. And, like, if we don't even have to get to seniors yet, although I'll definitely answer your question, but just using the example of the candy, because it's a really good one. Now, Granny's unwrapping a candy in the middle of church, and it's loud, but she didn't hear it. She doesn't hear that wrapper making all that much noise. So-and-so is annoyed by the noise of the candy. And so so-and-so turns around and looks at Granny and gives her a look. Granny has no idea why that woman's looking at her that way, or why that man is looking at her that way. Somebody else is going, ooh, she's got candy. I need to go sit next to her. I want one of those too. She has no idea why that person's smiling at her in that way. Like, do you see in such a small, tiny moment of in, she's totally minding her own business with her candy, how much information is being spread to those around her, and how much miscommunication can be construed in that situation because nuances get lost?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a perfect example. So we know that once upon a time we were able to call noise-induced hearing loss a and, well, noise-induced hearing loss has always been a thing, but once upon a time, we used to talk more about age-related hearing loss, and we would attribute it to the amount of, you know, noise and everything that a person has lived through in their entire life, plus just the effects of getting older and the impact that that would have. But today and age, with all the modern technology that we're using, we know that hearing loss is going to be much more something that everybody's living with. And it's just, you know, at what level are we able to perceive that, oh, there's an issue. Maybe I need to go get my hearing tested. Because right now, unless you perceive there to be an issue, or unless somebody points it out to you and you're proactive about it and you speak to the doctor and you get a recommendation.